Welcome back to another episode of NFT Catcher Podcast. We'd like to remind everybody that nothing on the show is meant as financial advice, and to please do your own research. Thank you, and enjoy the show.
Now the subject is NFT.
They're known as non-fungible tokens, or NFTs.
NFTs are exploding in popularity.
This is a technology that will forever change the way people interact.
So it is happening whether you understand it and like it or not.
This phenomenon is moving the digital.
You have now joined Jenny from the blockchain and Michael Keen on the NFT Catcher Podcast.
What's up, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the NFT Catcher Podcast with me, Jenny from the blockchain, and my co-host, Michael Keen. For today's interview, we have Pio joining us. He is the co-founder of the Nifty, a Web3 media organization, and co-founder of the Bodagos, or, oh my God, I hope I said that right.
Bodagos, yeah.
Okay, Bodagos, an NFT project on Solana. Pio, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. Very excited.
Yes, we are pumped to have you. It's always fun having like fellow podcasters on, you know, it's like, it's not that often. There's not that many of us in the space.
It's true. Yeah, I already feel the vibe.
Let's go. Yeah, we had Nick on like a long time ago. I feel like that was before episode 100. Like that was probably a year and a half ago or something. I don't even know. No. But
I want to say my favorite moment from when we had Nick on. It was like a year and a half ago. It was in the middle of like the crash where everything went from like 20 to 1. You know what I mean? Like Moonbirds and CloneX and all those went like from their highs. And I remember like all the way down, everybody's always like, ooh, 6 for CloneX. That might be a move. And I remember it was like 4.5. I was like, what do you think, Nick? 4.5 on CloneX. He just looked, he was like, no, I just remember that. And he's like, still kept going down. He's like, now's not the time, buddy. I mean, I just remember that.
Yeah. Like, well, that was a smart call by Nick.
It was.
When the bear market is starting, the chart is going down. So like, if you buy it, it's going to keep going down. You never know where the bottom is and when things are going to start going up. And NFTs are the first to lose liquidity in crypto and the last to gain it. So right away, the NFT prices just got completely washed and then the tokens followed, you know?
No doubt. Yeah, I didn't mean to cut you guys off there.
No, you're good.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah, I definitely have made the mistake of buying all the way. Like Top Shot, I'm like a little too into, and all the way down, I was still buying, like, even when I'm like, I should really just stop.
You're still buying now.
And I'm still buying now because I'm crazy. Yes. But now I feel like it's really the bottom. So
could be. You never know.
There's only up from here. But yeah, the cool thing about Top Shot is it's on Flow. So it's like prices are much cheaper, you know, a couple bucks. I'm not spending hundreds. I mean, maybe over time, but. So your guys' project is on Solana, which, yep. Why did you guys choose Solana?
So first of all, I think Solana is probably the best blockchain for NFTs like right now in 2024. There's a lot of different conversations that happen about this. I think you can make a case that, like, you know, for CryptoPunks, you wouldn't like bridge a CryptoPunk to Solana necessarily. Like Ethereum kind of has its place for the sort of like, you know, digital artifact style NFTs. Obviously Bitcoin, which is my favorite asset, is very interesting for ordinals, you know, inscriptions, whatever you want to call them, whether they're NFTs or not, it's basically the same thing. But I think Solana is the best modern blockchain solution for NFTs, because at the end of the day, like, liquidity is really important for NFTs. There's significant liquidity on Solana. The user experience is really chill on Solana. And these days when I use Ethereum, I don't enjoy it because it kind of feels like for everything that I want to do using Ethereum, it costs like $50 to $100 in gas fees for me to go through the whole process with a clunky user experience on top of that. And I'm not a person that's taking action a lot, besides like dollar cost averaging into various assets that I like. And so for me, Solana seems to be the best blockchain for NFTs. It was the only blockchain for Bodagos, and it's the blockchain that we're building on for the long term.
Let's run that. Great points here. I want to run back to the beginning of Bodagos, because when it first came out, I didn't realize you guys, is it your guys, like you and Nick and Easy? Is that like Bodagos? Is that your guys project? Is that how it started even? Because I didn't realize that.
Yeah, Bodagos is the second NFT project by the Nifty organization. Yep.
And the first one was, I think I have the first one. It was like the just the Nifty portal, whatever it was that.
Yep. Yeah, so yeah. Okay. ERC 1155 token on Ethereum, you know, single art image, kind of like hybrid membership pass type of thing. In other words, like a lot of ways to describe something that flat out does not have market fit. And so that's at the top of mind for us moving forward. And so you can expect that that NFT essentially will turn into something that does have product market fit.
Nice, man.
So if anybody's listening, that's like, that wants to write comments on Discord or YouTube or Twitter about the Nifty Portal NFT, it won't be...
Oh, don't worry about people writing comments.
But if people own it, they want to know what's going on.
Yeah.
It
won't Sure.
It won't be something that doesn't have product market fit anymore. I can promise you that.
Let me see if I still own it. I think I do.
You probably do.
I'm pretty sure I do. That's what it is. So the Solana bet has really paid off because you guys were pushing Solana early. I mean, I know. And that was a bet. And yeah, I see the smile, the smirk, like how like that was a bet and that really paid off. How's that playing out? How that
the root of it has to go, like the credit has to go to Easy on that front, because in late 2021, which is very, very early, like September 2021, he declared that he was only going to focus on Solana NFTs for his own personal like trading and investments. And obviously he's super into that. He's been doing that since high school. So it's like basically he's like a 15-year market participant. So he's got a ton of experience. And I think that's why you can kind of see the level of success that he's had really as an investor over the past 2 years. And a lot of people like kind of look to him to understand what's happening in the market on both like a short and medium term basis. The funny thing about Bodago's is like we had the date of the release set, right? And then the SEC published that report that declared that specifically Solana was a security. This was in like late May, early June, 2023. And we already had our date set. And it turned out we looked back and had to figure this out after because we didn't remember. The date that Bodago's came out is the date that Robinhood delisted Solana from the Robinhood application, which like was not a good look for Solana at the time. And this is like what, 7 or 8 months ago, which is kind of crazy how fast things can sort of change. Like I don't view 7 or 8 months as that much time. And the reason that we forgot about it is because that got priced in the moment that the report came out. So we felt the impact, the kind of monumental moment for us was in the weeks before when the price of Solana got chopped from like, I don't know, 27, 28 bucks to $17, which after going down to $8 during the FTX debacle, then rebounding, then getting another blow that that chopped another 30 to 40% of value off of it down to 17 bucks, we were like, what the hell? And so that was already priced in by the time we dropped Bodago's and by the time Robinhood delisted it. So we just didn't like remember that because it wasn't significant to us at the time. But ultimately, it chopped a ton of value off of the primary sale of Bodago's in US dollar terms. And then Solana, of course, like bounced back heavy like 3 or 4 weeks later. So we were like, damn, like, you know, if we had waited 3 or 4 weeks, we would have raised like another $400,000 or $500,000, which helps a lot. Like $500,000 in cash helps a business a lot, ladies and gentlemen. But whatever, it's all gravy. Gordon Gonner bought a Bodago in December, and that was huge. So, you know.
That was huge. That was cool.
Yeah, he was on his buying spree, buying literally one of, not everything, but like, of, you know, stuff he thought was significant.
It was his first Solana NFT.
Really? Oh, yeah. Shoot.
He said that.
Okay,
in the
that's
tweet.
Pretty special. That yeah. is pretty special then. The fact that also, this is kind of a side note, but the fact that you've like trained yourself to just like look at the camera and talk the entire time is insane. Like, I don't know how you do that. I've never like seen someone just like look at the camera the whole time while they're talking.
Well,
I feel like you're looking
you,
at me, but you're not. And I'm like,
well,
this
if I'm looking at you, actually, this is where I'm looking, right?
Yeah,
and
yeah,
so
yeah.
I put you on the left side of my screen. For the morning show, I put everyone on the show on the left side of my screen. I would put the call sheet on the right side of my screen, so I'd be reading. But I know that the audience feels better and probably you feel better if I look at the camera. So I see you in my peripheral, but ultimately, I'm used to talking to the camera.
That's fair. That's fair. I mean, this is audio only, so they can't see you. But
okay. I actually, to be honest,
too. Why don't you do the video too?
That's
you, we're
what
doing
we just,
video right now. Why don't you?
What did we just have on that said that? Why?
That was just yesterday. GT. That was just yesterday.
It's so easy.
Yeah, Gentle Tornado. He's like, you should do video too.
Well, you can do what's it called? You can do StreamYard.
Jenny's excuse was
to get ready.
I was gonna say her excuse was she's too high maintenance. Is what's her excuse?
Well, okay. Because I said I like doing the bare minimum, exactly. And then he's like, "No, sounds like you like to do the maximum." And I'm like, "Well, I guess if I'm doing something, then I want to like do it well." So I'm like, then I have to, you know, think about, oh, people can see me right now. Like, it's like a different thing. Like the fact that nobody can see me, I don't know. It's just like. It's different, I think.
You got to do it. I mean, you just got to do it. And you can stream it right to Twitter now. You can get somebody to make clips. It'll be a positive impact because you're already, like, we're doing the podcast right now. Like, we're already doing it.
Yeah.
The cat walking by will be funny. Yeah, you can do it.
Oh, my God, yeah. But here's the thing, too. We've done so many without it that I feel like I feel bad about all the ones we did without it. It's like, I swear, guys, we didn't just start, like, you know, like. We have all this other stuff.
Yeah, we have this sponsored podcast. It's called The Bitcoin Show. I might change the name of it because it's just like, I liked it at first, but now I'm just kind of like, I don't know about that name. But anyway, for the longest time, we only did audio. It was like a show that came about with a partner with Trust Machines who sponsors it. And when we hired our new head of strategy, this guy, Jack Roberts, who's had a huge impact on the business. He's been with us since January 2nd. One of the first things he wanted to do was make The Bitcoin Show a video podcast. Also, he's kind of like confused why we weren't doing that. And so we did that and it's had such a huge impact on it. And we already know about the impact of video podcasts, but we just didn't kind of put two and two together that it would be worth it to make that podcast a video podcast. So we just went through that too. And for example, we had Joe McCann on Tuesday, the CEO and co-founder of Asymmetric, the chief investment officer over there. And we put out a couple of clips from, or just one clip so far, but there's going to be more from the podcast. And he ended up not only like engaging with it, he took it, put it on his Twitter account, like not even a retweet, but just like embedded the video on his tweet, did a whole thing. And we were like, wow, the plan is just working out perfectly, you know?
Yeah, that's true. Repurposing. So then it's just live. You just do live for the video.
We're all about live. I've been all about live for a while now because I went through experiences as a content creator before where I ended up having a backlog of content to edit myself because I wasn't working with editors. I was editing everything myself. So I'd already played that game of having a backlog, having days or weeks go by, and then ultimately it's so hard to dig out the motivation to edit at that point, especially if it's time specific content, because then it's just stale. And I saw myself doing that a little bit in the very first few weeks that I made any sort of Web3 content and immediately was like, I got to solve this problem now. So I took a few days off just to figure out the live stream situation. And then I figured it out. And from then it's all been live. And when I first started working with Nick, we had a conversation about this because he had a backlog of 3 or 4 podcasts that he'd recorded that hadn't come out. And so we were just totally on the same page. It's like, no, we got to do live. Any editing that you do after the fact is gravy. And now we have, you know, 2 editing teams that do a great job. So the machine has definitely come a long way and we're continuing to improve it.
That's what I was listening to you guys. When did you guys start? When did you guys start exactly?
Together late 2021, like call it end of August, like Labor Day 2021 time.
And you really started blowing up, I would get, because I remember a lot of people talking about you guys at the first VCon. And I was listening before that. I'm trying to remember when I started listening, but I remember when you guys did like get the Rodecaster or whatever, like and start becoming all professional with it and then streaming.
Yep. That was VCon Minneapolis you're talking about.
Yeah, VCon Minneapolis.
That was when, I'm actually curious now when that actually was.
That would have been May 2022.
Oh, so we were already deep. That's also like when the market was starting. That was like the very top, like slash it was started. Yeah, you're right. May 2022. Right. Very interesting. So yeah, I mean, we had like a couple of little level ups. Like when we first started right away, people were like, oh, like, you know, what's this? And we got like a few listeners. Right. And then I remember we started pretty early, like maybe late September, October, 2021, getting like 200 live listeners to our Twitter space every day. And we were like, oh, that's like pretty significant. And then out of nowhere, I don't know when it would have been, maybe January 2022, around when we put our NFT out, it exploded from 200 to like 1,000 every day. And we were like, holy shit, like we're at 1,000 listeners every day.
So that's what it might not have been for VCon. It was earlier than that because I have 2 of the NFTs, by the way.
Oh, hell yeah.
Hey, I have 2.
You have 2 of the next one then.
I have two Nifty Portals. That means I'll get good automatically, or do I got to pay attention? And
probably burn them, but no like weird time window. Cause I'm so annoyed by this whole like time window thing. It's like, do you guys think that nobody has like anything else to focus on besides crypto stuff? You know? So I missed the dim airdrop. Yeah. Like I have a Mad Lad and a Pudgy Penguin. I didn't get the dim airdrop. It's like a five figure fumble. It's whoa, just cause I didn't press a button. Like,
there needs to be some service. There needs to be some services around that.
I guess. Or just send me the back in my day, an airdrop just popped in. Yeah, airdrop. I got the fucking Pudgy Penguin. What do you want?
Yeah, true.
Back in my day. Yeah, I love that. Nice. Now, but you guys are very professional. And I know you know the people that were competing with you. Most of them when you first started aren't around anymore. A lot of those early. Yeah. It's hard to do it for so long. It's hard to do it in every day.
I think there's that. I also think that it was strange to me that like so many people packed their bags and ran away from the quote crypto space pretty much as soon as they had an excuse to. Like, I really think people need to like get a significantly deeper understanding of like what exactly this whole thing is, because I feel like it's kind of possible to run away. Like at a fundamental level, you just understand like what Bitcoin is and like what Bitcoin's about to do to the world, and it has nothing to do with what the price is of it. It just has to do with like what it actually is. I feel like it's pretty much impossible to like quote leave the space. And so that's actually what I think people did, is like they just didn't understand what was actually going on. And so then they were like, oh, this was all bullshit, which is so strange for me to understand, and actually took a long time for me to even process it. But now I understand it, or excuse me, now I've processed it, and I understand that people just don't get it, so they leave. And that's honestly just what I think happened.
Yeah. Or maybe it was also like just too painful, like seeing everything, their portfolio going down. Like that's a very emotional thing. And I think some people they're like, I need to step away. I need to not think about this. You know, they're in the space. Like, I think it takes a lot of like tough skin to still be in this space and watch all of your assets just drop down in value and, you know, all the crazy stuff that goes on. I mean, it's also kind of exciting, but it's like, it's just like, it's a whirlwind, honestly.
Yeah. And there was also a lot of people that lost money even in the first bull run. You know, there really was.
Yeah.
And so I think there's definitely, you got to remember those people. Not everybody was like made all the money, was able to like ride it out. I know some people that definitely got pretty wrecked.
Yeah.
You know, it depends on how you approach it. And I feel like at the end of the day, like if somebody got wrecked last bull cycle, I would want to know how they were framing the whole thing. Did they come in because someone told them you're going to end up with more fiat money because of this? Because my response is like, well, okay, that's great. And it's better to have $100,000 of fiat money that you didn't have before versus not having it. But at the same time, when you start to understand going on, like what's going on, like I've been pretty focused on just having more Bitcoin than I had before for like 3+ years at this point. Like I've basically been structuring my financial life around how can I get more Bitcoin for like years. And with the fundamental, like, you know, thought that like, so every Bitcoin is going to cost $1 million within like the next 9 years. Like, I just know that. I'm totally certain of that. $1 million for one Bitcoin inside of 9 years. So does it matter if I buy it at 40,000 or 50,000? Not really. It really doesn't matter, right? Does it matter if does it make sense to sell literally any of it? No, not really. Because like, what's really going to happen? It's going to go up, it's going to go down, and I'm just going to be looking to buy more of it because I'm just marching towards an inevitable reality of 1 million. Then when you're at 1 million, you're starting to think, well, it's going to go to 5 million. Oh, well, it's going to go to 10 million. And before you know it, I'm just like, yeah, like I'm going to be like 65 years old and people literally are just not going to understand how I have the amount of Bitcoin that
and
I
also,
have.
And also at that point, you'll be able to tap your finger anywhere to use your Bitcoin or whatever. You know what I mean?
I'll be able to borrow like $1 million off the Bitcoin, like no problem, because the loan to value on that is going to be like 2%, and it's going to be like the best loan ever. So like, and plus like, keep in mind, I work for a living, and I have worked for a living for like my entire life since I was like 16. So I've always had income. There's never been a period. I've never been like, yeah, I'm just trading right now. Like that's just so I've never traded in my life. I just accumulate assets. Did that cost me last NFT bull run? Because there were NFT things that I could have sold for literally $250,000, but I didn't sell it because my fundamental thesis was this thing is like a high value thing that's going to be worth more in the future. And I was wrong about that thesis because it turns out that the people building those entities were not who I thought they were.
Which one was that? Which one was that?
What are you trying to get me to just light up?
Michael's like, wait a damn minute.
Which one are we at?
You know, I'm not going to like light up founders that didn't end up executing the way that they should have. And a huge part of that is for sure effort, right?
Like, I can't believe you're talking about Yuga like that.
No, I mean, like, I sold Yuga stuff. I should have sold my Coda when I first got it because it was like $100,000. And I guess I thought selling it for $30,000 was a better call, but I'm still glad I sold it for $30,000 when I did, you know?
100%.
I like your philosophy. Like, you know, you just, that's a really good perspective to have. You're thinking of like 9 years from now, and it really does put things into perspective and make you realize, oh yeah, I am, you know, if you're here for the long run, then, you know, the little ups and downs, the short term stuff, it doesn't really matter.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. But I do have to prepare myself for this like bull cycle because it's shaping up to be intense, quite frankly, when you look at like the Bitcoin ETF inflows, it's pretty wild. And the fact that it's not impossible for us to actually break all-time highs before the halving, which would be the first time that that ever happened and is just like a crazy reality. And I have $100,000 of Pudgy Penguin stuff right now. So I have a significant amount of Pudgy Penguin stuff. And I know that like it's going to probably go to at least $500,000, if not literally towards $1 million this bull cycle. Like that's just kind of my fundamental belief. And I also deeply believe in that team because I know that it's not what happened last cycle. And it's like an actual quality entity that's going to build basically forever, just like we're doing with Bodagos. So I'm like, now I'm wrestling with this thing of like, okay, well, I don't want to make the same mistake twice. And I know NFTs lose liquidity first. And so should I sell these Pudgy Penguins when it's $800,000 worth of Pudgy Penguins? Like, should I not sell that? Would it be foolish not to? And it's like, well, is there going to be another gnarly bear market? SBF's gone. Three Arrows Capital's gone. Do Kwon's gone. Sergey, Alex Mashinsky's gone. All these people are gone. So it's like wrestling of like the whole, you know, will we see a gnarly bear market in the same way? Or is that different now that TradFi is here with ETFs? Is it, and finally, are the quality builders here? And Pudgy Penguins is just not going to stop building. So the Pudgies are actually going to be the most crazy valuable collectible of all time. These are all the things that I wrestle with now. Realistically, I'll sell some percentage of the bag. But I think a lot of people listening would be pretty damn surprised at my capacity to just hold stuff and never sell it. It's like no
problem.
Yeah,
I was going to say, I can see you just holding it. Yeah, I can see you just holding it. I feel that too.
I think no doubt Pudgy is an amazing company. Luke is incredible. They're going to do incredible things. I don't know if the price right now isn't inflated because of all the airdrops that are being promised and even anticipated. I think some of that stuff is the reason it's 20. I don't know. I'm not saying it can't. So you're saying it might, like you're suggesting 50 ETH, you know, even more for the OGs.
Well, think about
like
it like
a Bored Ape type run. I'm thinking, yeah, go ahead.
I look at the price of a CryptoPunk and I comp a Pudgy to a CryptoPunk easy.
Ooh, like, will Pudgies flip punks?
Wow. Hot take. Pio says Pudgies will flip punks.
I don't know. Let me tell you one thing. I don't care about the airdrop thing. Like I actually don't. If I am going to get airdropped like $50,000 worth of value, okay, cool. That's incredible.
Right.
But I didn't like think about that at all going into it. And my fundamental thesis had nothing to do with that. It just had to do with the amount of liquidity I expect NFTs as a whole to suck in this cycle and what percentage of that liquidity I expect to go to the best project. And I view Pudgy Penguins as one of the best projects. I view Bodagos as one of the best projects, but obviously I'm biased because I'm a founder and I'm working on it every day. I view CryptoPunks as one of the best collections. I mean, I could keep going. I view Mad Lads as one of the best collections. I have one of those. We just partnered with Tensor. I went to lunch with the Tensor team this week. I view Tensorians as one of the best collections. So that's my perspective. And I just think those collections end up sucking the liquidity in. I don't even like because I don't like trade, I don't really care about the airdrops. I hope that if there's going to be a bunch of airdrops, I get all of them moving forward. I hope I learned my lesson with the DIM airdrop at this point, but it's not something I'm factoring in. Think about it like this. I think it's a foregone conclusion that ETH breaks all-time high. So if all-time high is almost $5,000, let's just say ETH goes to $7,000.
And that's, I'm going to clip that for my wife just so you ETH guaranteed all-time high. It's a foregone conclusion, honey. Don't worry about it. Don't ask literally, yourself.
Literally, I mean, the ETH ETF is literally going to get approved this year.
I know, that's right. It's coming, yeah, for sure.
It's coming. So all-time high ETH, no-brainer, going to happen. So let's just random number. Let's just say, I mean, a conservative number.
Not financial advice.
Sure, sure. A conservative number when you think about previous crypto cycles is like, well, the thing's going to at least go to 6,500. Like, how could it not? Like, once it breaks all-time high, these things go up. Look at the previous all-time high before last time versus the new one. You guys have a bunch of ETH. I say, I have zero ETH. I just turned it all into Pudgy Penguins. But anyway.
Oh, snap.
Yeah, I never have been an ETH guy. But I look at it and I know that the price is going to go up. So 6,500, if Pudgy goes 2x, from here, 40 ETH at 6,500. That's like over $250,000 for one big penguin. And then the little ones, let's say they go to 3-4 ETH themselves, at least. I mean, when you start to think in terms like this, if you compare it to like Bored Ape Yacht Club, Mutant Ape Yacht Club, it gets really, really weird really, really fast. It gets weird.
It can for sure. It can for sure.
Yeah.
And the Bored Ape, the reason it went from like, it was a lot to do with the celebrities. I really think sure. that. And I don't know. I don't know if that would work again, but I could definitely see all of a sudden Luke is like, yo, look who's a Pudgy now. And it's somebody. And that could really, you're right. That's how the ball does get rolling.
I don't even think about that, but you're like, right. Because like they do have good celebrity, like, energy.
He's in LA. Right. Yeah, exactly.
They're in Miami, but he's from LA though. Don't sleep on being from LA.
That's right. That's right. That's right. That's right.
Nice. Yeah, I used to live in LA. You'd be surprised at how quickly people can like really get close to celebrities. Like, yeah. I know, like, there's just been people I met in LA. I'm like, how do you know that like actor? Like, you like work at an accounting firm. How are you like hanging out with like Miles Teller or whatever, like that guy? You know.
Nice.
Okay, so you are like ultra mega bullish. I don't think we've had someone on the show like this bullish in a while, which is actually really cool and exciting. But I'm curious, what are, let's say, like your top three tips for the bull market? Maybe somebody's has only been here during the bear. I don't know. Maybe they haven't experienced the bull. Maybe they kind of forgot. And it can be a very emotional and crazy time. What are some tips you'd have for people surviving the bull market?
Yeah. No matter who you are in the world, buy Bitcoin and never sell it. I mean, the thing, so it's going to go to $1 million by like 2035. Like, I'll go more and more conservative, right? So if you know that, why wouldn't you have it? Like, why wouldn't you just buy it? Think about it like this. What happens, and I'm not trying to get weird or morbid, I'm trying to get extreme. What happens if Vitalik randomly dies tomorrow? What happens if Anatoly, the founder of Solana, randomly dies tomorrow? I'm not saying that the success and livelihood of those two crypto assets are dependent on those two individuals. However, I have to imagine that if one of those dudes randomly died tomorrow, it would have some sort of adverse effect potentially on the future of those assets. And by the way, I have over 1,000 Solana, right? And counting. Like, I'm still accumulating Solana. I have a Mad Lad NFT, which is additional Solana exposure. The NFT collection that I'm a co-founder of, that I also own a bunch of Bodagos, is on Solana. So I'm the biggest Solana bull. But what I'm trying to point out is that these other things besides Bitcoin are just flat out way different than Bitcoin. And Bitcoin is literally the new digital gold, the solution to, quote, money in the world that we've been looking for so long. It's the first time that human beings do not control money. So why would you bet on the US versus Russia versus China versus Europe versus Africa versus whatever versus the literal like equalizer of all of this that anybody in the world can buy? Doesn't matter if they ban it. As long as the whole world doesn't go full North Korea mode, you're basically just good to go with this Bitcoin thing. That's the only absolutely scarce asset in the world. Gold is not scarce. Alexis Ohanian just co-founded a company that's goal is to mine gold from asteroids. And he had a quote on a show where he said, I don't think we're going to find any Bitcoin up in those asteroids. And you know what? He's definitely right. So rule number one, figure out what the hell Bitcoin is. Understand it's literally going to go to a million in the next 10 to 12 years, conservatively. So why wouldn't you just want to have that be your baseline? And why would you care if the price goes up and down? Because if the price goes down, you can get more for cheaper. So that's like rule number one. I'll pause there before I go any further, but I can keep going obviously on rule number two and three, but I don't want to ramble on your podcast, you know?
No, you're good. That's actually really interesting. Now, how about this might be a conspiracy theory. So I'm not giant into Bitcoin, but they say, so what about the theory that what if Satoshi Nakamoto turns out to be somebody like very untenable, like say Vladimir Putin or, you know, Prince of Saudi Arabia?
So that's fun. Number one, it's super fun for like all of a sudden out of the blue. It's like, hey, this asshole is Satoshi Nakamoto. I feel like
or Xi Jinping. What if it's just like the state of China? It's just like that. And then
it'd be very impressive if any government entity made Bitcoin, which so I had this guy, Fred Krueger, on the show. You got to follow this guy.
Nightmare on Elm Street.
Well, this is the real Fred Krueger. Let me put it that way. This guy is a PhD in math from Stanford. So that alone, like, holy shit. I was a math major in undergrad briefly. And let me tell you how hard that major actually is. It's insane. Guy was a PhD, which means he literally proved things in mathematics that nobody else proved while he was at Stanford in that program. I had him on my Bitcoin podcast and I said to him, I was like, so is Bitcoin the most significant technological breakthrough since the combustion engine? Because that's what I've been kind of saying, because I kind of look at the history of humans. Mm-hmm. The internet is obviously insanely important too, but like the combustion engine, like the car, the plane, the train, this is like really, really significant for human beings. He said, no, it's the most significant breakthrough since E equals MC squared. A PhD in math from Stanford said that. Okay. So anyway, I'd be pretty damn impressed if a government, which we all know how good governments are at technology, came up with that. I think it's fun. If the Chinese prime minister came up with Bitcoin, that's just fun. And I'm not too worried about it. And also another thing people say on this whole front is, well, what if Satoshi sells his coins? Because there's some like lost wallet that has a bajillion Bitcoin, the Satoshi individual wallet. That's better for Bitcoin because you're just talking about more distribution of the Bitcoin. I hope Satoshi comes back from the dead and just starts dumping his coins on the market.
How much money's in that wallet?
I mean, you have to check the price and
hundreds of billions.
Probably it's a lot of dough. It's bullish now because that Bitcoin's in theory out of circulation, and it's bullish if it comes back into circulation.
Right.
The ETFs have $500 million.
So literally everything that could possibly happen is bullish. It's completely bullish. Either way, I love it.
Well,
that's a good politician right there. That's a good politician right there.
Think about it like this. Let's say it's 1989 and I tell you that we go back in time and I tell you, hey, the internet's going to be so significant that everything that you watch on TV is actually going to go through the internet. You're gonna have a literal TV in your pocket that can tell you what direction to go in your car, no matter where you are in the world. You can go to Italy and use this GPS thing in your car and drive around the Italian countryside. This guy Elon Musk is gonna put a satellite in space that gives the whole world internet, no problem. You're gonna be all the things that you do. You go through a travel agent. You go to school. All this stuff. All that stuff is just gonna get deeply integrated with the internet. You can be able to do it from your house. You're gonna work from your house. You're not even gonna go into the office anymore. If you told somebody like that, you're going to order your food on the internet. You're going to order all your home supplies on the internet. If you told somebody that in 1989, they would say, you are completely out of your mind. Get out of my face. Like, what are you even talking about? There's all these video clips of Bill Gates and these other guys going on, David Letterman, Bill Maher, all these shows where they basically get laughed off the stage talking about basic stuff when it came to the internet, not like revolutionary, visionary stuff. I just view Bitcoin as an identical thing. And I think that people will try to say that Bitcoiners are out to lunch just because they don't understand Bitcoin. But the reality is it's that revolutionary of a technology. It's groundbreaking for literal human history. A PhD in math from Stanford said it out of his own mouth. It's the biggest thing since E equals MC squared. I think that's why, if not understanding that, is why people leave the space. And that's why people sell Bitcoin, which is like the dumbest thing you could possibly do. Like if somebody sells Bitcoin, they're just so out to lunch. I'm probably going to piss people off that are listening that sell Bitcoin on the reg, but yeah.
Okay. First of all, now we know Pio is a time traveler. He is from the future, and he's here to tell us to buy Bitcoin. Two, okay, what's your number two?
Number two is like, even with the NFT stuff, which is orders of magnitude riskier than just buying Bitcoin. I mean, holy shit, is it risky? You have to like actually understand why you're buying a thing. And let me just share this. I have an edge over every normal person that buys an NFT because of how deep I am working in the NFT industry. And so when I buy an NFT, I have so much like sort of info on why someone should buy that NFT that it kind of feels like a no-brainer for me. That's why I just like have these Pudgy Penguins worth $100,000. And if they drop to like $60,000 tomorrow, I'd be like, wow, I actually can buy more. I thought the ship has sailed. Like, I'm not buying more Pudgy Penguin stuff right now. I thought the ship has sailed. But you know, if I had an opportunity to, I totally would, because I got in so much cheaper than where it's at now. I'm not going to like raise the cost basis. I'll just buy safer stuff, because it's like, look, at the end of the day, NFTs are super risky. But like, you have to understand that like you have to dig deep to try to get some kind of edge to figure out why you should buy an NFT. And like, a Discord with other people that aren't deep on the industry side and are just kind of talking to each other and nobody has any insider edge and they're just kind of developing theses on their own, it's not really going to give you any edge. Even if somebody like makes a couple plays that like do pretty well, it's like, it's kind of gambling at that point in many ways. So you want to really understand that and kind of manage your risk accordingly and kind of find the real stuff that's actually really good versus just buying something because some like random guy that hit on like a shitcoin trade or something said that he's buying some new random project. A lot of new stuff is going to come out over the next like year and a half, 2 years, and probably less than 1% of it is anything that I would touch. So like, I really need to know who is building an NFT project and why they're doing it. And I basically need to see like, you know, Fortune 500 level strategic planning and execution for me to even care about an NFT project. We talk about NFTs on the show now, but I find it less interesting. And I actually have Clemente host the show more when it's NFT stuff, because I'm not as interested in it. Don't get me wrong, I can get interested in it if I find out about a sick team that's building sick stuff, but there's not that many of those. And so many people are still going to put stuff out where they're just trying to make a quick buck. And that's basically a scam. And I'm not going to buy your scam. Like, absolutely not. No shot.
And it's usually a quick couple million.
That's the now craziest.
Now you're talking about Quantum Cats now. That's messed up, Pio.
So Quantum Cats. So check it out. Yeah. Let me talk about Quantum Cats. Yeah. Quantum Cats is one. I think about Quantum Cats almost every day. I don't own a Quantum Cat yet.
Yeah.
I think about it almost every day. And I'm like, it's 0.19 now. Do I buy it here? Do I take point? So check it out. So Bitcoin is sound money, right?
Why would you spend your precious Bitcoin?
So here we are, Jenny. So check it out. So Bitcoin is sound money. Fiat currency is not sound money. Fiat currency forces you to, quote, gamble because it's not sound. So if you don't actually buy assets with it and practice asset-based savings, you're going to get debased. The melting ice cube. This is what Michael Saylor presented to his shareholders, right? But when you're on a sound money standard like Bitcoin, and like the Roman Empire was on with like their gold or whatever, right? If you look at like the history of currency, as you can imagine, in human history, there's a lot of history that, you know, it relates to money, right? Even though people don't really talk about that. People talk about like, they kind of take money for granted. But anyway, if you're going to take your sound money and turn it into an investment of any sort, that's extremely speculative because you're betting that the investment is going to outperform the sound money. I made that bet with Ethereum versus Pudgy Penguins. I'm happy about that bet. My cost basis for all my Pudgies is like 20 ETH, and just one big Pudgy is 20 ETH now. So it was like a home run. It was perfect. I'm really glad that I did it. With Quantum Cats, I view it as a top tier team. They raised $9 million. They want to make something real. I find them to be just absolute badasses.
What do they want to make? What do they want to make?
It seems like, based on my conversation with Dan Held on the Bitcoin show, they are interested in building a proper L2 on Bitcoin, which is a really big deal. That's really hard to do. It's just so hard to do. I like really want to communicate how fucking hard that is to do. It's hard to do on any blockchain, but it's really hard to do on Bitcoin. And also the founders, Udi and Eric Wall and Udi Wertheimer, think they're both so, they're brilliant. They're badasses. They're both technical. Eric is insanely technical. Eric's like kind of like a genius a little bit, right? He's like in that direction for sure. But I do think they're both emotional. I'm emotional. I'm like a psycho person for sure. I'm like an emotional Italian American person. And being super emotional when you have an asset in market that's going to be volatile as all hell and holders go ape shit on you is really, really hard. So I wonder how much volatility there's going to be with those boys running the project. I still am.
Because it'll take years to build that, right? It's not coming in a couple months. Yeah.
And you got people screaming.
It's a couple of years.
Probably, and you got people screaming in your face, what's going on with the NFT, like, every day.
Right, exactly. Every day. Exactly. There's no patience.
So yeah. I'm still on the side of I'm probably going to buy one, but that's like an example of a super duper quality team that I know for a fact is like crazy strong and going to build something wicked good and, like, you know, here for the long term. But that those factors make me kind of wonder if it's worth changing the Bitcoin into it. This might go down as sounding stupid, and like a quantum cat costs like 2 bitcoins in like 9 months. Like, that's so possible, and I'll look like an idiot. But I just got to put all that out there because I haven't bought one yet, but I still might.
That's great perspective, man. I appreciate that. That's definitely stuff I didn't know about it.
Thank you. So I think that was a long number two.
Oh yeah, number three. I forgot.
I guess
we're still on this. So yeah, what's the number three?
What's number three? I mean, like, pay attention to things like Blur and Blast and like Tensor and like these young, really smart entrepreneurs that are younger than 35, in Pac-Man's case, younger than 25, that are probably this generation Zuckerberg, Jack Dorsey type people. And I don't know, I just kind of feel like they're probably going to do well. And you're going to have to wait for those things to fully manifest. And all right, fine. Third thing, just don't stop pressing buttons so much, because you're not going to trade your way to $1 million. It's just not going to happen. If you can accumulate 1 Bitcoin this year and then wait 8 years, that's how you're going to get $1 million. If you can accumulate a ton of Pudgy Penguins, although now the price has run up a lot, or if you can accumulate a ton of Tensorians, a ton of Bodagos, and like just hold them, not financial advice, not promising future price appreciation, blah, blah, blah. I'm a project founder. I'm biased. But like, ultimately that's how I fumbled $250,000. Or last time was because all those things that I had held for like a year, my Mutant Ape and the ApeCoin drop and the Coda drop and the Land drop and all that stuff, that was 1 year plus in the making. The other project that was on its own worth $250,000, that was a year plus in the making. If I had sold those assets, it was long-term capital gains. That's where the real money's made. It's not made on short-term trades. I know some people got extremely lucky with Pepe. My buddy Fran Alation sent me Pepe within hours of it dropping. He's on the West Coast, so it was like 3 a.m. Eastern time, midnight his time. So I was sleeping, but I woke up to it at like 7, 8 a.m. in the morning, right there in my Twitter DMs, just boom, Pepe. Like, go put a half ETH into it. I think if I'd put a half ETH into it right there when I woke up, I literally think that would have been like $1 million. Like, actually, I actually think so. But stuff like that doesn't bother me, because like, I just don't buy like random bullshit that literally turned out to be a scam. And the Pepe, like the devs literally rugged, and it was a poly project. So kind of goes without saying. Wow. But that's not like the actual way that somebody's going to get rich. That's the way you'd get rich, the same way that somebody that bets on sports and does like some 16 game parlay or like actually makes money in Vegas gets rich. And that's like 1 out of 100,000. You do have higher odds in crypto because the quote house doesn't always win. It's like PvP or whatever. So it is better to do crypto gambling than it is to do sports gambling or Vegas gambling. But ultimately, like, the real deal is like building a big position in something really, really, really good and waiting for a long time. So like, if you're a quote trader, you're kind of saying that you have a gambling problem and that you're delusional. I'm just saying like, it's kind of true.
Yeah. Hey, I second that. What are your thoughts on Doodles?
I think that this comeback is interesting and it's fun. We had the founder on our show the other day. He seems like a qualified guy that's held really notable positions outside of Web3. I think that it's still really, 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 really hard to make an NFT project work and build an NFT brand and build a Web3 company to a significant level. So I'm not all in. I'm not ready to go all in and be like, yeah, back up the Brinks truck, buy like 25 doodles. I'm paying attention to what they're doing. I'm going to be very interested to see what comes next. And I'm rooting for them because ultimately the more Web3 projects become really notable outside of the NFT space, like outside of our little bubble, is super duper important. They signed Pharrell. That's like absolutely nuts. I mean, they did it at the top of the last bull market, but he seems to still be around. So, you know, they're a cool, interesting entity. The art is unbelievable and the artist is an insanely talented artist. So they have a very strong foundation and I'll be paying attention to what they do.
Well, good. I hope you get one.
Cause you have them.
Yeah.
Jenny also just bought
bullish on doodles.
She bought $2,500 in merch last night.
Not $2,500. I said $400. Oh. But yeah, it is kind of crazy because I was like, $400. I would never just spend $400 like on anything that's not like rent or something expensive. Like, why did I spend $400? But, you know, I kind of am obsessed with doodles. So
it's your profile picture, right?
Yeah, it's my profile picture. It's, you know, the cover art of this podcast. It's everything.
Okay. Let me show you guys one thing. Don't say it out loud because we're on the audio podcast, but I'm going to show you something. This is Bodago's merch right here.
Ooh, exclusive. We saw it here first, folks.
Yeah. And I, you know, you can read between the lines on why I'm bringing these up because of doodles. But anyway, I just wanted to show you guys this. My dog got one of these in her mouth and I was like devastated because I keep dead stock of everything that we have. And
literally
made me like almost cry. No, I'm exaggerating, but I was like, come on, Sapphire, you really got to chew on that merch item. Come on.
That merch item. That's cool. Okay, Michael, do you have any last minute questions before we go to
first off, Jenny, do you know what Alameda Masterminds is? Have you seen Alameda Masterminds?
Why are you asking me? I don't know.
Because P.O. produced this music video with Nick, and it is very good. It needs to be watched. You need to watch it. No, it's good.
Should I watch the auto-tune
and all that stuff? Like it. When I watched that for the first time.
Thank you. That's all Nick. The audio's all Nick. He wrote the song. He picked his little beat. He mixed it.
No kidding.
The audio's all Nick. The video was, I shot it and I have a music video background, but he and I, finished the edit together. And yeah, that the whole process of making that happen between a Sunday afternoon when he texted me, I want to make a rap video. And the video came out Wednesday afternoon. So between Sunday afternoon and Wednesday afternoon, everything happened.
Wow, dude. I loved it. All his faces and stuff in that video. Like he's a natural for that, dude. I thought that was so funny. He did. It looks like a real professional music video that anybody would put out. It really does. Now you're a pro for sure. I've known that since I first started listening to you guys, when you guys came on together.
Appreciate it, man.
And give us the like TLDR quick. Cause we didn't get you to talk too much about Bodago's, but you talked about how bullish you are on it. So give us the quick reason why, other than the fact that the founders are just incredible.
On Bodago's, like what we're doing.
Right, on Bodago's. Yeah. That's what give us like the quick, like
of course.
Like
absolutely.
Like so people, if somebody wants to buy it, I'm looking, what is it? It's 6 point something SOL at the moment, which is probably I guess about $700.
Yeah, not gonna comment on the price because
no, you don't need to that whole thing. But I'm just saying it's lower than it was, so it's actually a time to buy. So let us know.
Sure. So, I mean, look, we're building a brand, and I think that when it comes to NFTs, when it comes to like, you know, these projects, it's about brand building. And we have a few metrics that we're just focused on making number go up for, that we think will be able to not only get the brand in front of as many eyeballs as possible, which is a fundamental important aspect of building a brand. When you look at iconic brands, we can name them Pokemon, Hello Kitty, Mickey Mouse. It's about eyeballs and visual recognition, right? And so not only do we point to those metrics to just say, okay, this brand's getting in front of, you know, more eyeballs, but it's also something that you can point to as a key metric to potential investors if we want to do another funding round, or to people that are interested in buying the project. So we're definitely a very metrics-driven organization, and really just ultimately delivering products, whether digital, physical, or, you know, software based, that people actually want, right? So you can really just think about Bodago's as a brand that's being built through Web3. The NFTs are the digital collectibles. I showed you guys some merch. We're building physical collectibles and just building it brick by brick, you know, working with our merch vendors and exploring the possibility of having some of this merch in retail stores. Obviously, that component to the Pudgy Penguins narrative works really well. I don't view that as something that's like an auto snap your fingers, NFT price go up, because it's not, it's just not that. But when you build these things brick by brick and you have a really long-term vision and you know that your organization has real seven-figure annual revenue, so the organization's going to be able to continue to survive even if we don't have any venture funding, and we're continuing to hire people on a full-time basis in different areas so that people can narrow their focus and really just hit home runs in their respective departments, right? Like a guy like Clemente running social media, I want to get to the point where he can, his whole focus is running the Bodago social media account. And before you know it, everybody's saying, oh my God, I'm just seeing Bodagos everywhere on Twitter. What's the deal with this thing? Again, the eyeballs. I think the key is to like actually think about it as simply as possible. Don't be too early with things. We've already experienced this. We tried to make a free NFT platform that basically nobody wanted. Everybody was interested in it at first because they thought that they were going to be able to sell the free NFTs, even though we said, these are custodial. You will never be able to sell these. People would hammer us and be like, when can I sell it? What the hell is going on? I want to sell this thing. And I'm like, we've been saying since the beginning, you can't sell it. There's no point in crypto in trying to innovate before people are ready for innovation. So keep it simple, build the brand, get feedback, make adjustments, and ultimately just focus on the few metrics that are really important and make them go up. That's my response.
Nah, that's awesome, man. It's good stuff. Really good perspective. Great chatting with you. I'm glad we finally got to connect. We actually tried to a couple years ago after we had Nick, but Jenny got you on. So,
okay.
You and I messaged once or twice. No big deal. No big deal. Jenny told me not to talk about it.
Well, what?
I'm joking. I'll tell you why. She did tell me not to talk about it, but I'll tell you why, because it's funny. But when I messaged you, and this was like a year and a half, 2 years ago, and you were like, I could do about a half hour. So I was like, all right. And then we didn't even have like a half hour. I was like, all right, I guess we'll table it for now. And Jenny was like, don't mention that to him when he comes on. But I just ruined that. Sorry, Jenny. But I did it in a funny way. It's fine.
Hey, I really, really enjoyed myself. Yeah. Just saying that. So I appreciate you guys having me on.
It was a lot of fun. We have one tiny more segment. Yeah, Jenny will kick it off. But yeah, right? Oh, yes. Go ahead. Do you want to say something? Or
No, I was saying let's do it. And if we were closing, I was going to say do video moving forward. But anyway, I want to hear the last segment.
That's good advice. All right. Go ahead, Jenny.
I know. Honestly, you did kind of make me think about it. I'm like, should we do video? Anyway, okay, let's do Guess Wars. It's our rapid fire segment where we each ask 5 questions that may or may not have to do with the NFT space. Usually they don't. So, okay, I'm going to start. What is your favorite podcast outside of the NFT space? That's out of like crypto Web3.
Sure. I listen to MMA podcasts. I listen to the Joe Rogan podcast. I guess typical like bro podcast stuff, I suppose you could say.
Okay. Yeah, I actually, that reminds me, you were on Jeff Saris's podcast. Yeah. 2 years ago, I was on his too. Yeah. I was like watching it, and you said that you used to train martial arts like before you got into.
Yeah, I still do. Yeah.
Do you? Okay. Yeah. Cause you were like, I want to get back into it, but I kind of stopped. But that was like 2 years ago.
That was when I was so completely, I was engulfed in what we were building with NFT stuff, and I still had a day job. So I just no time. So I gave up martial arts for that period of time, but I'm back.
Let's go.
Hell yeah. What is your go-to restaurant in New York? If you have family in town and there was one restaurant that you need to take people to.
I like this one. I mean, look, there's a few. There's a place called Laser Wolf that's relatively new. It's like one of the hot restaurants in Williamsburg. That one's really good. There's a place called Misi that's a pasta place, and I'm very picky when it comes to pasta, and they do some pretty good pasta over there. It's another pasta place called Forma Pasta that I've been hitting up recently. That's like more casual, like takeout. There's some good places. New York's really good for food in certain directions, and actually not as good as people like try to make it out to be for other stuff. Yeah. Another restaurant called Ugly Baby. That's the only American restaurant that I've ever been to where the Thai food is even relatively similar to the Thai food in Thailand. So that one, if you're a Thai food person, you live in New York, you got to hit up Ugly Baby. You got to.
That's a horrible nice name one. For a restaurant.
No, you're right about the food in New York. I always say for New York, you can get the best pizza in the world and the worst pizza in the world in New York. You can get both.
Okay, yeah. Mine was kind of similar. It has to do with food, but what is your favorite Italian dish?
Oh, wow. My mom makes this dish. She doesn't make it often, but it's like renowned among my like friends, anyone that's had it. It's a bolognese come una volta. So in Italian, come una volta means like once upon a time. So all Italian recipes are already old as hell, right? They're all like literally like 500 to 1,000 years old in most situations. This one's once upon a time. So it's like, well, how old is this thing, right? Because there's traditional bolognese that's probably like 1,000 years old. So this is the older one. And it's a bolognese sauce, which is like a meat sauce, but without any tomato base. The base is bone broth. So if you're like a fan of meat, if you're a fan of like, you know, beef and like animal products, this is like a really hearty, delicious pasta
this
dish.
This sounds up Jenny's alley. This sounds there, right up Jenny's alley.
Come una volta bolognese. You gotta try it out. If you can find a good one, it's not going to be easy to find.
That sounds awesome. That's a good one. What is your favorite museum?
Oh, okay. I like the Met and the MoMA in New York. I will admit I've not been to as many international museums as I should. Like I've not been to the Louvre and I've not been to the Van Gogh Museum in Amsterdam. And those places are really interesting to me. I'm a painting guy. I'm really big on painting. So yeah, the Met and the MoMA have like a bunch of Picassos. They have some Jackson Pollock. Yeah. So that's cool stuff. It's actually cool to go to Sotheby's and Christie's, like the auction houses, because they have like a bunch. It's kind of like a museum because they're like, they're selling the paintings, but they're there. Like last time I was there, they had like 9 Basquiat things. So that was cool. And last thing is there's Basquiat's estate, his like family, they never sold any of the work. So they have like 300 different pieces, like mixed medium, like, you know, 200 paintings, like 100, you know, sketches, all this stuff. And they're doing this like tour, which I think is a cool idea. Called King Pleasure, and it was in New York. I think now it's in LA. Maybe it still is. I don't know. But King Pleasure is like the best art exhibition I've ever seen because it's like 200 paintings, 200 of the best paintings by your favorite artist, right? Whereas like Jackson Pollock, most of his stuff is held by private collections. I think Picasso, a bunch of his stuff is held by private collectors. A lot of Basquiat's estate has like 200 plus of his paintings. And it's like this road show. That's this completely insane, you know, huge 10-foot painting showcase. That's super duper cool.
That's dope. Okay. Okay. So you said you lived in LA for a bit.
Yep.
Who is the most famous person that you met?
In LA or just period?
Period.
The most famous person I met. Well, one time in LA, I was at a bar and I had like had a few too many drinks. So I was probably speaking pretty loud and I was just like talking to like two friends of mine. And then out of the blue, Andy Milonakis just walked by and I just went like, oh shit, that's Andy Milonakis. And I think because I had had a few too many drinks, I said it loud enough that he just immediately turned and we were just like, like standing there facing each other. And I was just like, and I'm like a fan of his like raps, like in the Three Loco hip hop group with Riff Raff and Dirt Nasty, big hip hop fan. So I was like, hey man, I'm a big fan of your music. And he just no hesitation, he didn't say anything. He just no hesitation, like slowly moved his hand up. And I just like slowly moved my hand up. And we just had like this moment where we like locked hands like this. And then he just walked away. Didn't say anything. I was like, oh, that was kind of fun.
That's hilarious.
That's hilarious. You know, he was in NFTs for a while. Andy and I saw him at one of the NFT parties at the first NFT NYC.
Yeah, yeah. I did not see him then, but I know he was involved. I met Miguel at an NFT party and he was at VCon actually. And he was super, super, super humble, super down to earth. Someone was like shilling him something to his face and he just took it. He took it gracefully. So yeah, Miguel was super cool.
That's what's up. That's what's up. That's funny. My famous person, I'll throw it out there. I sat right in front of Steph Curry, Super Bowl 52. I have a nice picture with him. Oh, Eagles won the Super Bowl. Yep.
He walked by me one time in LA, middle of the day, when I first moved there in 2014. He had just won the championship for the first time, I think. If you look it up, I think 2014 was the first time he won it. So it was like 2 months after that. And I was like 24 years old, like Boston D-bag. You know, I grew up in Boston, but I just moved to LA. And I was like, yo, Curry, you should go like play in Boston. And it's just like, I'm just like, why did I say that? Like, you know, like, so that was funny. But yeah, shout out to Steph Curry for not
Yeah. He was nice. I didn't bother him the whole game. There were like kids coming up, taking some pictures. And then after the game, I was like, oh, I got to get a picture. We just won the Super Bowl. It was like the best moment of my life. And I got a picture with him.
So, nice. That's pretty cool. That's
yeah,
awesome.
Yeah.
I met Action like Bronson. Slob.
I'm like, oh, is that Action Bronson? Oh, yeah, that's what's
well,
up.
Well, literally for our Basil, he was on the same flight as me in first class. And when I walked by him, yeah, I walked like, you know, a couple months ago, I walked by him and I just said, he had like looked at me. And I think he picked up on the fact that I knew who he was, but then I just kind of played it cool. Mm-hmm. I like ignored him. I didn't want to make him feel uncomfortable because I'm like walking by him. But as I walked by him, I just went, amuse-bouche, which is like, you know, he says that on songs and stuff. And he was like, oh, all right. You know, like, so that was a cool one.
That's pretty funny. That's what's up. I love it. You guys are going to start meeting some more famous people. You keep building what you're building and doing your thing. You guys are definitely going to.
When the prices are up, when crypto prices are up, all the famous people come out. When they go down, no one gives a shit.
Yeah. All right, let's see. What is your favorite flavor of ice cream? Simple one.
I don't know. Like, I guess vanilla, chocolate, you know, something like that. Okay. I'm like a traditional guy, but I like all types of ice cream. Like ice cream is good. Oh, pistachio. Stracciatella, if you're in Italy getting the gelato.
Okay, so now you're
pistacchio, you know. You
oh
know.
Man, have you been to Rome? Have you been to Italy and done all that? Like the gelato places where they treat it like wine and it's like covered and
Italians don't play when it comes to food. Yeah,
no,
I went to Italy.
They do not.
Yeah, every summer growing up, I studied abroad in Rome, so I've spent a good amount of time in Rome.
That's awesome.
Anyway, guys, I do have to dip. It's a real pleasure though.
Thank you, Pio, so much for joining us on the show. Honestly, I don't really watch shows, so I wasn't like familiar with your game, but you're a really good talker, I guess. I don't know how to say it. But yeah, you're a great guest to have on, and we appreciate you for joining us. And thank you all so much for tuning in to this episode of the NFT Catcher Podcast. We will catch you in the next episode. Peace.
Thank you for tuning in to the NFT Catcher Podcast. We hope you enjoyed today's episode and learned something new about the exciting world of NFTs. If you enjoyed today's episode, please take a moment to subscribe to our podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. And if you really love what you're hearing, please leave us a rating and review on your favorite platform. If you want to stay up to date with the latest news and insights from the NFT space, be sure to follow us on all the socials at NFT Catcher Pod. You can follow Jennifer at Jennifer_Pseudo and Michael at NFTicket. I'm your producer, Andy, and I'm at AJC254. Our theme song's by It's Just Los. We always appreciate your feedback and support, which helps us reach more people and bring you informative and engaging content about NFTs. We look forward to bringing you more great NFT content in future episodes. Thanks for listening. Peace.